Welcome to the I Create Daily podcast. I'm Leora Alderson.
And I'm Devani Alderson. We're your co-hosts on this journey of creativity and productivity.
I Create Daily is for artists in every genre of creating, from musicians to writers, crafters to inventors, bloggers to entrepreneurs. I Create Daily is a movement for creators serious about your art.
If you're into creating anything, this podcast is definitely for you. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey.
Welcome to the I Create Daily podcast, a movement for creators serious about their art. I'm Leora.
And I'm Devani. And today we're joined by Eric Rosenberg. Eric is a freelance writer whose articles have appeared on sites such as Huffington Post, Investopedia, and Business Insider. Eric is also a personal finance blogger, the host of two podcasts, a public speaker, a DJ, and a private pilot. Welcome, Eric.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. It's funny listening to the list of all the things I've done. You would think it's interesting having time for everything.
Right. Well, speaking of that, okay, so what we'd love to do is to start with the origin story, because you haven't always been doing everything. You didn't have enough time because you did have full-time jobs, jobs working for others. So yeah. Tell us about your, and right now you're full-time on your own, right?
Yes. And I love it. It's the best job in the world, working for yourself.
Okay, great. Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about what you were doing before. And I know that you had a period where you were doing the second job, like building your dream job kind of thing. So just take us on that journey.
Sure. So, you know, I've always been business and entrepreneurial minded, even going way back to my Boy Scout days, even my Cub Scout days. I sold popcorn, and then I was the top seller in my Boy Scout troop of coupon books, you know, the Gold Sea and Entertainment books. And I've always had business in my blood. My grandpa was a marketing professor at the University of Arkansas. And my dad, he works at the Chamber of Commerce, and we owned a video store growing up, actually. So I was exposed to business and business ownership from a young age, which I think was great. Actually, from my, I think it was my 8th or 10th birthday, my grandpa for my birthday gave me just what every kid wants, a general ledger accounting notebook to track all of my income and expenses. So I don't know that I ever filled it out, but those lessons definitely stuck with me. So when I, as I was growing up, I grew up in Denver, Colorado, in that area. In my high school, I was really lucky to go to a school that let me take business classes instead of art and music classes. Wow. So, I've always been creative. It was never really the visual arts, and I played trumpet in middle school, but my music was more the DJing, like nightclubs, like boom, boom, boom kind of stuff. But it was a little mini side hustle. But I took those business classes in high school, and I loved them, decided business school was for me. I went to the University of Colorado, actually got a full ride scholarship thanks to being a Boy Scout camp counselor and manager there. So got out of school debt-free and earned a finance degree there. My first job out of school was as a bank manager, which that specific company wasn't for me, but I learned so much running a bank branch. I was doing all the day-to-day operations and approving new loan applications and mortgages and things like that. So when I left that job, I'd been blogging as a hobby since 2006. I wrote some opinion pieces, because obviously the entire world in 2006 was interested in what some 20-year-old kid had to say about, economics and politics and world affairs. And I had an Israel and the Middle East focused blog for a while, which taught me so much about blogging. I was always self-teaching code, from high school. Actually, my first website I ever had was a fan page for The Rock, the professional wrestler, because when I was 16, I thought the whole world needs to know how much The Rock is awesome. But that's how I started.
There's a lot of, you were in that window, in that time frame where being a blogger, while it seemed like this new weird thing that, kids did in their parents' basement, it launched so many people in that whole time. It's launched, your blogging has launched so many careers and entrepreneurial endeavors for so many.
When I started building websites in the beginning, there wasn't even a such thing as a blog yet. Like, that was like the early days of Napster, when it took 45 minutes to illegally download a song on your dial-up internet connection on AOL. Yeah. So I actually built that on GeoCities, if you remember that exists.
I remember. So fair to say that you were definitely an early adopter.
Yes, I've always been into computers and technology and things like that. But, you know, my career path was finance. So when I left that job in the bank, I had been reading all these personal finance blogs, and many of them were stories of people who'd gotten into serious financial trouble, and they were blogging their story getting out of debt or fixing whatever the situation was. And I started to think, well, look, I have a finance degree. I've never had financial problems. I've run a bank. I should be able to do this, right? And I love blogging. So in October 2008, I started a website because I knew nothing about internet marketing. It was at narrowbridgeadventures.blogspot.com. And that is, you know, now almost 10 years later, is the personal profitability that is my main website and blog and podcast. But, you know, that all started as a side hustle. It wasn't this thing I thought was going to become a career path. But what was really interesting in retrospect, when I started that website, I didn't realize I was writing my new resume for this freelance world that I was going to fall in love with. I didn't even know much about it yet. So, you know, I started this blog, and I think the biggest first turning point, my first little like hockey stick growth moment of my website and my online career, was I joined this group called the Yakezi. It's still out there at yakezi.com. The idea was it was a community of personal finance bloggers who were selflessly helping others. It was led by a guy named Sam. His site's Financial Samurai. And I learned in that group how to get advertising on my blog and how to negotiate deals. And we would do group deals where we would say, you know, to one advertiser, we can help you get an advertisement on 30 blogs or 50 blogs. So that helped me start to really make more money online. I remember the first time I got a $10 ad, I was so excited. I was like, I can go buy a beer with what I made on the internet. How cool is that? And then it grew to like, wow, I paid for all of my beers for an entire month. Like, and I was in my mid-20s, so I didn't have low bar tabs. I enjoyed going out on the weekends with my friends. And that it grew and grew. And in 2011, there was going to be this financial bloggers conference. It was going to be in a suburb of Chicago, Schaumburg. It's not an exciting place, but it was exciting for me that week because I said, if my blog makes enough money this year to pay for the trip, then I'm going to go to this conference. Yeah. And I hustled.
Was it FinCon by chance or a different?
It is now FinCon. It was, though, that year it was called the Financial Blogger Conference, okay. The first year. That's amazing. So, because PT, the guy who runs it, also learned more about online marketing since. Yeah. So that year was the Financial Blogger Conference, and some of these Yakezi people I'd met were going, and I'd never met any of them in person before. These were all my, you know, internet friends that I was in forums with. And I the blog made enough, and I, you know, bought a plane ticket. I didn't know if I was crazy or what I was going to get to. I'd never gone to something like this before. I was, you know, mid-20s by myself, and hopped on a plane to Chicago and went to this conference and met. That changed my life completely. It helped me really learn how to treat my online work as a business, not just a hobby. It started helping me network and learn what others were doing, leading them to success. So I, you know, got to meet these big names in personal finance who now they're my buddies. Then I was like intimidated to walk up and even say hello to like J.D. Roth, who founded Get Rich Slowly. He's now a good friend. I actually used to live about a mile from him in Portland. So wow. Funny story. But I met all these great people because of it. And I've been to every single FinCon since. I made a point to get even more involved every year. I find most things in life, the more you put in, the more you get out. And FinCon was that thing for me. I started running an Ignite speaking event, which for those who haven't heard of Ignite, it's kind of like TED Talks on speed. There are these 5-minute talks. You get 20 PowerPoint slides on a 15-second auto advance. That's exciting. It's fun. And I've run that at FinCon every year since the second FinCon. I was in a mastermind group actually with PT, the guy who runs the conference. So we got to be good buddies. But along the way, I started meeting these companies who were reading my blog and said, you know, we like what you're writing. We like what you do. Would you write for our site? We'll pay you. I was like, well, sure, pay me. All right, whatever you want. That sounds great. And, you know, I wasn't one who grew up as a writer. I actually hated and loathed English and language arts classes. until I was a junior in high school and had an amazing English teacher. And then I had another amazing English teacher my senior year in high school. So 2 years in a row with great English teachers. Thanks, Mr. Rowe and Mr. Moldau. You left a long impression on me. I think Mr. Moldau was the one who, like, I really understood grammar for the first time. So, you know, like things like that I'd struggled with when I was younger. And I mean, I was always the math science kid. I was not the like creative one. But, you know, I had some great teachers and that really helped inspire me to do more. But, you know, I was always this finance guy. I never thought I was going to be a writer for a living until the opportunity, I mean, it didn't fall in my lap. There were a lot of things I had done that put me on this path. When I started seeing, you know, the writing on the wall of, wow, I can make some good money on the side doing this. Well, heck yeah, I'm going to do it. So I went and I earned an MBA along the way, also in finance. So, you know, doubled up on my finance. You know, I was working on that cubicle career path and I was doing well. I kept moving up in jobs. I went across a few industries. I got some big raises, made my way up to senior financial analyst at a big company. I was doing really well. But in 2015, I looked online and I do income reports at personalprofitability.com. So I've been very open with how much I've made. I've done them every month since 2012. Yeah. So I, in 2015, at the end of the year, I looked, I'd made about almost exactly $40,000 in revenue as a side hustle. And I thought, wow, if I can do this in 10 to 20 hours a week, imagine what I could do if I did it full time. Instead of going to this pesky day job where I'm, you know, I enjoyed what I did. I say pesky, you know, I liked what I did. I worked hard. I was a spreadsheet junkie / spreadsheet wizard, depending on what day of the week it was. I was doing a lot of accounting and financial analysis. I was working on a multi-billion with a B dollar product lines. I was working on things like I helped work on Apple Pay before anyone had heard of Apple Pay. Like, I was doing some cool stuff. But you know, at the back of my mind, I kept thinking, if I never give this a chance, I will always wonder, what if? And I'd almost left my job a couple of times to go full-time online, but for whatever reason went back, either, you know, a great job showed up or just it didn't seem to work out. And I just kept thinking, you know, it keeps getting harder to leave my job the longer I wait. Because at this point, I had a wife who was a stay-at-home mom and a six-month-old daughter. And I was the sole income earner. So like any good responsible dad, I decided to quit my job, sell my house, and move somewhere more expensive. And since April 2016, I have been a full-time online worker, primarily earning as a freelancer, mostly from writing. I had done some web design and development in there, but I actually stopped that after I did an 80-20 analysis of my finances, found that if I cut... It was a risk. I cut web design and development. That was about 20% of my income and just walked away from it at a time I was a little more tight on money than I am now and thought, well, this is taking 80% of my time and the cause of 90% of my stress. So I'm just going to stop that and focus on writing. And over those next few months, my income about tripled from $4,000 a month in revenue to over $10,000 a month. I hit $12,000. The first month I went over $10,000 a month and it has not gone back down since except for 2 months. 1 month I missed it by $200, but I used to be, you know, I used to round to the nearest million. I'm a finance guy. Yeah. So I let that slide. Right. And then last month, actually it was December 2017. I had a baby girl while my family was evacuated from our home due to the wildfires here in Ventura. So it was like a crazy whirlwind month. I only ended up working about 2 weeks. So working 2 weeks, I still almost hit my goal.
I saw on your blog, you were taking pictures of the fires, like just a block away from you. A house on fire. That was December 6th.
And yes.
December 5th, and your baby came the next day on December 6th, right?
Yes, exactly. And we were evacuated up to my in-laws' house in Carpinteria. That's about a half hour away. And then my wife went into labor and we called the doctor. We said, should we go the other way away from the fire and just have the baby at a different hospital? He said, no, come back. So I did the crazy drive that every dad has done at some point driving. Hopefully, I guess they've done driving their wife to the hospital, except I did it with flames on both sides of the car driving down 101. Wow. But the baby came out beautiful and healthy, and she's wonderful. And so that month I missed my revenue goal by about $900, but I'd still say I made over $9,000 in a month. I worked 2 weeks. I pinch myself like, this is my job. This is my life. It's incredible.
Yeah, like a million different ways we could go with this conversation. Thank God for those two teachers who helped you, and, you know, shout out to them, because, you know, that point is just having people who know that there's something there, even if other people don't necessarily see it, even if you don't see it in yourself, is so, so important for everyone. Yeah. And so that's amazing. And then, so like, there's so many writers who, whether they're fiction writers or freelance writers or whatever, and they look at what you're doing, they're like, I want to do that. Obviously, like, I love writing, and that, like, so, and looking back at your stories, there was so much that you did. You weren't just like resting on your laurels, waiting for, you know, opportunities to land, or, and you weren't even necessarily going out and applying for freelance jobs. You were writing. And you were writing every day or every week or however often you updated your blog. You were constantly making a log of your finance knowledge, your wisdom, your advice, your life story, honing the craft, you know, constantly over those years. And people noticed, and they were like, okay, can you write for us? And so what advice do you give to other freelancers who are still in that place of struggling to figure out paid gigs? Like, how do you recommend they approach that?
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't start making hundreds of dollars an article. You know, there's that, I it's kind of a cliche saying, but it was 8 years of hard work and I was an overnight success. Right. 'Cause I started that blog in 2008 and I didn't leave the job until 2016. So, you know, to a lot of people, and you know, as an online personality and with podcasts and blogs, I curate my social media just like many of the other successful people do. And having taken those pictures that are, you know, I've been on a blogger trip where I was taking those like glamour shots that you see in Instagram feeds and things. You know, they're not an accident, but they're also, you know, everyone has to keep in mind we're all putting our best self forward when we do that. So don't think that we all just started one day making $1 million. You know, I haven't made $1 million yet. I'm working on it. But you know, we all start somewhere. It all starts with the first dollar. And so, you know, there's a saying, you know, dress for the job that you want. On the internet, just do the job you want and work at it until someone starts paying you to do it. Start by doing it for yourself. So for me, it started on my blog. And then I started doing it on other blogs. You know, I started charging, you know, I said $10. That first ad I got, I was so excited. And if someone offered me $10 to do something on the internet now, it wouldn't be worth my time. It wouldn't be worth the effort. But at the beginning, it was. Yeah, so don't, you know, poo-poo on things that don't pay you what you read. And these huge successful names online, people like Pat Flynn and John Lee Dumas and these guys. I met many of them at conferences like FinCon. But, you know, they all started at that same place. And they're all normal people. They're all just like us. The one thing that sets them apart from the people who struggle with their money in their career is hard work and dedication and the persistence and repeating what works. Now, that repeating what works has been such a big thing for me. You know, I thought I was going to be like a Pat Flynn. You know, I was building personal profitability. I was like, this site's going to be awesome and I'm going to make $100,000 a month. And I'm not going to have to work that hard and it's going to be so cool. But the freelancing was what was working. And I could have ignored that and kept working on my blog. And I'd probably still have a day job. And I'd probably still be going to a gray cubicle every day. And I'd be enjoying working on my blog and making a nice little side income from it. But I noticed that the freelancing is what was working. So just because it wasn't what I expected to be the thing that I would be doing, or not even necessarily the first choice of the thing I wanted to be doing, it was the thing that worked. And it was way better than, you know, having to wake up at 6 a.m. with an alarm clock and go commute to an office and sit in a cubicle and have endless meetings and spreadsheets to commute home, you know, maybe miss my kid's bedtime, you know, not see my family as much. You know, yeah, sure, I got paid well and I had great benefits. So I'm not knocking jobs. There's a reason many people have them and they're a good thing. For most people, that's going to be the primary way you make your living. So, you know, don't neglect your job. But I saw this other path that looked like something that could be more exciting, give me more freedom. And now I'm even making more, which I was nervous wouldn't be the case, but it has come to be. So you know, I'm making more and working less. And I mean, not today because it's my quiet podcasting day, but most days if I want to see my daughter at lunchtime, I just walk out. Or, you know, if I want to ask my wife a question, you know, I don't have to send her a text message worrying about my boss seeing me on my phone at work. I holler or I walk out and talk to her. You know, I don't have to worry about vacation days. Although every vacation day is also a work day for me. It's very rare I take a day where I don't work at all. Even weekends, even you know, when I'm out of the US where traveling, I always have, and it has a broken screen right now, but this phone is my, it gives me the freedom to work wherever I want, but it also is the leash that makes sure I'm always working. Yeah. So there's things you have to think about when you're self-employed. Like you don't have those days where you can show up and have, you know, butt and chair time and not get that much done and get paid because, but there's also the thing, something that I love about it, the thing I love most is in a lot of big companies that butt and chair time is really what you're rated on. It doesn't matter if you do better work or more work or, oops, sorry, that's my co-hosts there.
Don't worry.
Yeah. So they made me lose my train of thought too. Yeah. So,
you were talking about, you know, butt and chair time just because
exactly. Yeah. So in the big companies, butt and chair time is such an important thing. And your boss cares more often if they see you at work than what you're getting done. Whereas now, as a freelancer, it is a complete meritocracy, which if you are confident in the work you do and you're willing to work hard, I think is a better way to work. Because it's not like I'm just being rewarded for showing up. I'm being rewarded for doing the best work possible. And if I can do it faster, I get paid the same. I just get to do it in less time. It's not like if you get all your work done in 30 hours at a 40-hour a week job, they just let you have that 10 hours to go hang out with your family. Right. But in this job, that's exactly what I could do. You know, yesterday, I hustled my tush off and I hit my income goal for the day at 3 in the afternoon. And I decided to take a walk around the block and played with my daughter for about a half hour. And then I came back and dealt with email for an hour because the email's never ending. But you know, I had that time that I could take away and still make more than I would have made at that cubicle job because I was willing to do what I'm really good at and do it the way that I work best, which is from home.
And it makes so much more sense. Like you were saying, it's an honest work, you know, it's real and it's creative. You still get to be creative in your own way on your own time. And like Giovanni was saying, there's so many other things we would like to ask you. So we're trying to, you know, keep it in somewhat of an organized fashion. So for instance, your income reports are amazing and we look forward to linking to your site so that people can see those. It's wonderful that you're so transparent because people really want to know and it really helps people understand and learn. So it's very clear from your income reports that writing is your top income producer. So that makes sense. What can you share? And I know that it took you a long time to get there. And yet because you started out not knowing anything, basically, you've learned a lot of things along the way to help shorten that journey because most of that happened for you in the last couple of years. So what can you share with freelance writers in our audience toward, you know, like they may or may not have their own blog, but what are some of the best ways that they can earn more income from writing freelance online?
I'd say the number one thing is recognize that there is at least one thing that you know more about than anybody else in the world. And there are probably a bunch of things that you know way more about than most people. You don't have to be the world's number one expert in something to be a great writer and to be recognized as an expert. You just have to have some proven expertise. You know, so for me, based on my background, it's finance and accounting, but you might be into, I think some of the best routes to real good success online is finding a niche that you can write about or a niche depending on your preference that has a real business tie-in. So, you know, you might be really into, I don't know, competitive duck herding. That is a thing. I talked about it in a speech once. But like, so if you start a blog, it might be the very best blog on competitive duck herding in the world. You probably won't, you'll see some success, I bet, because there's not that many blogs on it, but there's also not that much of a market for it. There's not a lot of people out there spending money on their duck herding hobby. So something that people spend money on, I mean, that's what businesses care about, and that's where they're going to hire. So, you know, I know people will say follow your passions, and I think that is great. You know, I was passionate about blogging. I am personally passionate about finance. Most people are not. But if I were passionate about duck herding, probably wouldn't be in the same position today as finance. Now, given I said that, you know, finance is one topic that has a lot of businesses, but there are so many topics. Mm-hmm. And you know, each industry pays a little bit different. I spoke at TBEX, a travel blogging conference earlier last year. And in travel writings, there are so many people that want to do it. You know, it's this economic supply and demand thing. You're going to get paid a lot less to do it. That doesn't mean you can't make a good living at it. It's just something you have to go in knowing, you know, these are the average rates and this is my competition. This is what's going on. So, you know, think about those things that you know a lot about that line up with some business and in some industry and write a lot about that. I, for me, writing on my personal blog is what kind of proved me as the expert. And then being able to talk to a potential client saying, oh yeah, and I have 2 finance degrees. I used to run a $500,000 investment portfolio for my university's endowment fund. I've done this, 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 and this. You know, I've worked hard to become that finance expert. So, you know, maybe your thing is, I'll pick coding right now. Let's say Python, that's a coding language. Like maybe you are the best Python coder out there. Like start a Python coding blog. I bet you within a few months, some company is going to find it and send you a note and say, we'd like you to write a Python app for us. So, you know, that's a way to, you know, you might not be writing, making that money, but it's a way to make money through your writing.
Yeah.
But then again, you might find companies that want to hire Python people or want to teach Python. And that's the real place where you might be able to find the two things meet up where you can make money writing about what you want. So doing the writing and, you know, so I guess what I'm kind of getting at is you have to find your own path, but you have to find a path in a way that there's a customer for whatever it is you create. And
that is so important. And we were just listening to a podcast thing the other night about that. And they were talking about photographers and how if it's a really perfect time to get into a niche of photography where you just get super zeroed in on, like, and one of the people was saying that she did photography of women doing yoga, you know, and so that's a super specific niche of people. And so in terms of like writing and making money writing, also the other good point you made was that sometimes the writing itself isn't what earns the money. It's the product of you have a blog where you're a great writer and now they hire you to do something based on your expertise as a consultant, as a developer, whatever it is. And like you mentioned before, again, knowing that sometimes you have to make a pivot and say, okay, well, my money is being earned through this activity that was catalyzed from my writing. And you have to be aware enough to be like, those are the opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just work hard and become the expert. It sounds simple, but you know, if let's say that one thing you know about, if you want to prove you're the expert, you know, start a blog about it, write one good post at least once a week for a year, you could call yourself an expert at that point. I mean, like, what makes someone an expert? I mean, write a book. I mean, I've written a book. I'm working on another book. But it's there's no one out there who has the right to say what makes one an expert and what doesn't. All that really matters is the person that you want to hire you thinks you're the expert. So create that impression of yourself. Impressions matter. You know, that's why I brought up that we all have those curated Instagram feeds and Twitter feeds and things. You know, we want to put that best version of ourselves forward. And you know, when I share stuff on, you know, say Twitter about a finance topic, you know, that's again that just showing that expertise in finance. So, you know, I'm not going out there writing, you know, endless articles on I don't know, art history, something I don't know that much about. I like going to art museums and all, but you know, like that's not my thing. So I'm not out there writing about it. So I'm writing about the thing I know about. Make sure that you present yourself with that expertise, and don't, I wouldn't work for free, but don't be in the beginning, don't be turned off by low rates. It is, I wouldn't say pay your dues is the right term, because I hate, that kind of thing. That's part of why I left banking, as it was a very pay your dues kind of industry. But with freelancing, there is kind of a build your portfolio rather than pay your dues. So for me, it was write my blog, take some lower paying articles in the beginning, not free, but lower paying, $25-$35 an article, where now I'd charge minimum 10 times that. But I started somewhere. We all start somewhere.
Right.
Even Elon Musk and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and Jeff Bezos, they all started somewhere before they had billions and billions of dollars. Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook in his dorm room, like on a laptop. Right. And now he's like the fifth richest guy in the world. Right. So don't think that, just because you're starting at humble beginnings, you don't have a great future ahead, and work for the job you want.
Right, definitely. So speaking of rates, is there the finance industry is one of the higher paying industry, that and insurance. So if someone does insurance, because their advertisers pay more. So that makes sense. Do you know, two questions. One is, is there a good place, a reliable resource for the industry rates in different industries? Because we may have some writers who could write for two different industries. And so naturally they should position themselves for the one, you could have written about flying at this point, or about personal finance.
Or DJing.
DJing, right. Yeah. Finance is more lucrative right now, so you're choosing that and staying with that. Doesn't mean you can't branch out. So that is one, is if you're a resource, I forgot the other, so I'll let you answer that one first.
Sure. So when you're new, there are a bunch of platforms and marketplaces out there that I don't really use anymore, but were helpful in the beginning. And those are places like Upwork, Fiverr, there's a handful. For writing, there's a bunch of job boards out there. Again, stuff I used to use a lot more than I do now. The Pro Blogger job board, I probably have emailed, 100, 150, 200 different opportunities on there. And of those, maybe five worked out to something worthwhile. But one of them was my longest client ever. We just ended after 3 or 4 years last month of writing for that site once a week. But I didn't raise my rate that much on him over time. So when he left, I call it laddering up. I found a higher paying client to fill that spot. But in the beginning, you just need to fill the spots.
Yeah.
You have a certain number of hours per day you can dedicate to your creative, profitable pursuit. So, let's say you have that full-time job and you're still in cubicle land. I'm cheering for you. When you get home, use those evening and weekend hours to reach out and take some of those, maybe less exciting gigs, because that's building your portfolio. And eventually then you can work up to the point where, some of my biggest and best clients come from a platform called Contently. And that's partially because I've built good relationships with some of the editors there. I'm that one with that MBA credential that helps. That was one thing when I left my job, I thought, worst case, I always have that MBA to fall back on. That's why your parents tell you go get a college degree before you go try to start your rock and roll band. Because when the rock band doesn't work or the baseball thing doesn't work out, that college degree it is still worth something. And a lot of people debate, is it still worth going to college? I am in the camp of absolutely 100% education is so important.
Yeah.
Get educated and become the expert in something. Because for me, even though I'm not doing what I was trained to do, being a corporate finance executive, essentially, I still use that knowledge on my own path. So,
and it helps in that specific industry where a lot of people still respect those titles of, you have an MBA in finance. That's really important. Can you talk about this topic for our community? And they're definitely going to pick, especially in industries like that are on the more academic side, they're definitely going to look at that degree and be like, well, of course we would have him, right? Instead of this whoever who we don't really know. Because there's a lot of people on the internet who fake it, and
they could say make it works, though. Don't forget that. Yeah. do fake it. Yeah. I don't discourage faking it. But only fake it when you can deliver. Don't Yeah. Never overpromise.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan of under promise, over deliver. In every interaction I have, whether it's with a reader or a listener or a client, you know, I always tell them it will take me longer to write something than it probably will, because I don't want to be late. I try to set low expectations. I want them to have high expectations, but I try to set lower expectations than what I think I can deliver, because then they're always wowed.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind as well. We keep talking about other industries. So, you know, I'd go to those job boards and those sites. There's other writing job boards out there as well. And there's one, I'm trying to think of the name. Let's see, I might have a shortcut to it right here. Clear Voice is a good one that I like. There's a few of these out there, these platforms where you can show your expertise on specific topics and get hired for those specific topics, or hunt down articles in whatever topics you write about. Odds are today, I know creative people probably wouldn't love to hear that the STEM education topics are probably the strongest, science, technology, engineering, math, medicine, because that's the direction the world's going. And we're moving towards computers and digitalization and AI. So that's what businesses want. So that's what, that's where you can make the most money. But on the other side, remember, treating it like a business, wherever there are the most consumers that are spending money on something, those are the places that you can find opportunities to earn.
And that reminds me of the question I forgot earlier. Most of your clients now, do they find you? Are they repeat clients, or are you still going on job boards? Is it both?
At this point, it's a hybrid. I now really have more clients come to me, which is a very nice place to be. But that actually happens, coming full circle again, because of FinCon. So because I go every year, and because I've made a point to be a visible personality there, I get up I'm on stage multiple times every year at FinCon. If you can't tell from here, I'm not super shy. I don't mind being the center of attention. That helps. But that got me to a point that, people started to notice. This year I was nominated. There's an award show, an annual awards at FinCon called the Plutus Awards. And they're essentially the FinCon Awards. And I was nominated for Freelancer of the Year this year. I was one of 5 finalists. So even though I didn't win, when there was a freelancer marketplace, I was able to go in there and say, I'm one of the top 5 people here at what I do. So then when I left, even though I didn't, actively follow up with all of them, I did with a few that I really wanted to work with that were like, the rate was right, the content's right, I'm excited about what they're doing. Those ones, I make sure to really actively follow up with. But some of them more followed up with me because they were excited to meet the guy who was nominated.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen at FinCon 1. At FinCon 1, back in 2011, no one had heard of, maybe 50 people had heard of, Narrow Bridge Finance is what I called it back then.
Yeah.
It didn't happen overnight. It took that that dedication and that focus. I'm one who, I call it entrepreneur ADD or shiny object syndrome. I have this tendency, I see new business ideas everywhere. I joke that I could trip and look back and say, I should invent an anti-trip device. Yeah. That's the kind of I think of something constantly. I'm like, oh, there's a new business. There's a new business. I have a few in the pipeline right now. And I think that has probably hurt me a little bit in my online success because I get distracted too easy. If I focused on a few things, I could do better, than do a mediocre job on a ton of things.
Right.
So I like to say, don't do anything half-assed, give it the full ass or no ass at all. But I don't think it has to be, you only have one thing that you work on, because of having multiple income streams, I think is very important. There was one time I lost a job that was a day job where they, pulled me into a room and said, today's your last day. Here's going to be your severance. And I went home and I did not freak out like most people would, because I knew I could find another job. I had that MBA and I had this online income that wasn't enough to pay my entire living expenses, but I had an emergency fund and I had some income still. That I think that's so important. So I keep building more income streams. So freelance writing, as you see in my income reports, is by far the biggest, but it's not the only. And I think that's important for freelancers more than most other people. But I think it's really important for everybody, because it's not the days where you get a job and you're there 30 or 40 years and have a pension anymore. Most people move jobs every 2 or 3 years. And if you don't, you're probably losing on your total lifetime income because of that. Right. So, but you can't trust that employer either. A lot of states are right to work states. They can let you go, you can get laid off, whatever, at any time. So always be ready to fall back on yourself and your own skills and build your own businesses and assets. I think that's such an important thing for all of us today.
Yeah, great advice. Before we move on from the amount of income people can earn from writing, can you share do you charge by the word or by the article? What is your typically?
So I can't give too many details on this. I can give kind of a general. My newer clients, I'm typically bringing on at about $300 an article. I have some below that, some above that, but that's a lot of it comes down to the level of work that I will be putting in on the article. So some might be, I can write 1,000 words with my eye, and I type really fast. I could write 1,000 words with my eyes closed in a half hour, and I am the expert, so I don't have to do a lot of extra research. That I will charge less than something where I have to find, I have to do a couple interviews and find lots of sources and create tables and do math and use those finance skills. So every article and every client's a little different. Yeah. But doing what I do, so I like that you brought up a word rate, because people ask sometimes, and for some clients I do a word rate. But one thing that I think really sets me apart from a lot of other writers, most people, especially in this finance space, most people applying for the same jobs and gigs as me have a journalism degree. Mm-hmm. So they can write really, really well, but their knowledge on finance it's like, I'd say, light and fluffy. They can write about it, but it's the stuff that they found from USA Today and Wall Street Journal, and they just kind of synthesized it in their head and regurgitated it. Whereas I can create financial scenarios. Like if I'm writing an article for a get out of debt website, let's say, I can one, draw on my own experience paying off $40,000 in MBA loans. But two, I can, do the math and run the scenarios, and I'll go research on the government statistics websites and find the average person with student loans and what they look like and create their scenario and do all the numbers. So for that, I'd charge a lot more.
I think there's a lot of freelance writers who are maybe feel upset or intimidated or scared, I guess, that it's so easy to find these spin writers online as well. And yet there's a very, very clear, because we own several online web properties where we've hired writers and we've had to take the article and completely basically rewrite it because we looked at it and was like, it's so obvious when somebody is not the expert. And so it is just important to honestly be the expert in your field, because eventually that will actually pay off.
Yeah. Yeah. And pick a field, as we talked about a little bit earlier, that has opportunity and ideally not too much competition, like sports writing. I would avoid that like the plague, because there's 100 million people in America who are obsessed with football and would love to be sports writers. Yeah. So that drives the rate you're going to get way, way down. So even if you're the number one expert in, the Kansas City Chiefs, and you want to do write about football in Kansas City, there's probably a lot of other people that want to write about the exact same thing and can probably do at least as good of a job, if not a way better job than you, just because of the nature of what it is. So it's find that niche that's right for you, that you love and have that expertise. And, something to keep in mind, I've talked about passion. I just said love. Every article I write, I'm not like, yeah, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to write about accident insurance today. I wrote about accident insurance yesterday, and that was not how I felt. I was staring at a computer screen oh my God, I have to write 500 more words and then I'm finally done with this thing. It's it's work. When you take something that you love and it goes from something you do because you want to do to something you have to do, it does change your relationship with that. So, flying, I love to go fly a plane, but if I had to wake up and go be a commercial pilot and had to go fly, I'd probably feel a lot different about it than when I wake up and can go hop in a plane and do a circle around my city. So keep that in mind. It is work. They call it work because it's work, not because it's fun. But that doesn't mean work can't be fun.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, you do, it's like what Chase Jarvis was saying on Creative Live or some kind of podcast where he was talking about, again, you do the things you have to do so you get to do the things you want to do. So not all photography, like for commercial photographers, for instance, is going to be the dream kind of photography job, but you do that and that helps pay the bills. So you can do more of the more creative pieces that you like to do. So that makes a lot of sense. So we're beginning to wind down in terms of time, but if you could share with our audience, what you mentioned, you had to write that article and you really weren't motivated to, but you did. So there's a lot in our philosophy. It's all about creating daily, doing the work daily, and then that we'll see results. It's inevitable that we'll see results and we'll get where we want to go. So what are your daily creative habits that really keep you going even when you don't want to?
I'm big on to-do lists. So I use Asana. Like it's, without it, I don't know what I would do. I would probably be late on a lot of assignments. I'm very big on creating. I'd say the biggest thing, which I guess, and you said three things. I really just do one thing again and again and again. It's creating systems that work for me. It's like I'll pull in a personal finance example. If you have to remember to do a manual transfer from your checking account to your savings account every payday, you might miss it. But if you set an automatic recurring transfer every payday, you don't have to think about it. It will just happen. So I try to build my business with that same philosophy. I try to set up systems. I've gotten to a point now where I have two virtual assistants. One just edits the podcast and one does a lot of the other stuff with me. So I've built systems where things will come in and flow through them that I don't have to touch. I have processes set up with different clients. I have notes in my Asana for each client, like what my requirements are on each article, how I bill them, how I do all that. There's building all of those, you know, it's like building a safety net for my forgetfulness, essentially, is my number one thing. And, you know, I can't, you know, we talk about daily habits. I write almost every day, but also remember to take days off because, well, it's great to sit down at the keyboard and write, you know, 5,000 words in a day if you can. That's amazing. I've had those days where I just feel super motivated and I can write like 8 articles in a row. And I don't know where that motivation comes from. I wish I had it every day. But then there's those days that you just need to not do that and remember that as well. And it's okay to, you know, go play with your kid or go hop on your bike or do something to clear your head so the next day you can really come back energized.
Good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an excellent point. So tell us about your podcast.
Yeah, so Podcast One, Personal Profitability Podcast. I've had that going for, I think, 3 years now, which I guess makes me a dinosaur in podcast years. it's personal finance and entrepreneurship focused. Episodes are generally under a half hour. They have like a 15-minute interview with someone who's done something awesome. I love it. That's at personalprofitability.com. And I started a new podcast at the very beginning of this year with a co-host. She's someone I know because of FinCon. She had been a guest on my podcast, and we just had, you know, when you have those interviews where you have like that perfect chemistry with someone and that, right, like, you know, bounce things off each other. Like, we had that, and then I was on her podcast, and it was the same thing. And I'd had this idea at the back of my head for a while. There are so many people who don't talk about money and politics and religion because it's not polite. You know, they're the big taboos. But so we talk about like the weather and the local sports team that like, who really cares? Like what we really are made of as people is money, politics, and religion. So that is what we started a podcast about. It's called Oh No, We Didn't. And we talk about all the things that you are not allowed to talk about at your grandma's dinner table. If we don't offend at least one person per episode, we're doing it wrong, but it's hilarious. We have so much fun. I'm really excited about where this one will go. We're just a month in and we're having a blast putting it together.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to tuning into that. Is there anything in closing, like any book that you're interested in or that you most often recommend that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I have a favorite book and I have a giveaway for the watchers and listeners. So favorite book, The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. It is the only book I've ever read more than once. I've read it 3 times. And I will probably read it again. I just love it. It's if you have a dream and you don't know how to follow it, it will inspire you to get moving. It is just so great. There's a quote in it that I come back to again and again, that if you want something bad enough, the whole universe will conspire to make it happen. Yeah. So I love that book. And the freebie for you guys is if you go to personalprofitability.com/bootcamp, I have a free week-long series. You get an email in the morning with a link to a video. They're like 10, 15 minutes long. And each day you'll learn a new personal finance or entrepreneurship skill to get you on your path to personal profitability. Totally free, no strings attached. And yeah, I'd love to help anyone out with that.
Excellent. We look forward to linking that. Well, did you have anything else for now?
No, that's just awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome interview, amazing tips. And yeah, for anybody listening who wants to get into freelance, anything really, really, so like, this is the era to start building your online presence and just learning it and doing the work and finding angles, unique angles to share your own story. And so, like Eric's done.
Yeah. All right. Well, Eric Rosenberg, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Same for us. All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for joining us for the I Create Daily podcast. Please let us know what creatives you would like us to interview and what topics you would be interested in hearing more about.
And if you enjoyed this show, please leave a review on iTunes. We value your feedback. We read all the reviews, and it just helps us get the word out on the I Create Daily podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.